Welcome to episode 116 of the Piano Pantry Podcast. Amy Chaplin here, your host, ready to bring you this podcast ad-free thanks to the support of friends of the podcast on Patreon. Join today for as little as $4 a month and come alongside your colleagues to support this work. Last week, I worked with a consulting client through new policy considerations, including enforcing a no makeup lesson policy. To give or not to give makeup lessons is a topic I don't think will ever go away in our profession, as the private lesson format makes clients and teachers alike naturally feel as if there should be more flexibility than there might be for something like a dance class, but that's not necessarily the case. Since this debate is always such a hot topic, unsurprisingly, the most downloaded episode of this podcast is one by Australian-based teacher Samantha Coates on how to not give makeup lessons. Since many of you are likely going through the process of updating policies for the next term, I wanted to bring you this popular episode back into your ears today. Samantha invites a perspective that really helps paint a picture of why a no-makeup policy is absolutely reasonable. If you've ever experienced emotional labor determining makeup lesson policies in your studio, let me provide you with Samantha's piano teacher therapy today. Stay tuned to the end, though, as I follow up Samantha's conversation with some personal thoughts, experiences, and perspectives on the topic that was not part of the original episode. Before we dive into this episode, I wanted to share a little tip with you today. If you include an awards time at the end of your studio recitals, what about calling it a time of recognitions instead? Last year, I caught a glimpse of a teacher friend's program online who used this term instead of the term awards, and it struck me that the simple change in verbiage really was perhaps more fitting. Yes, we might have actual awards we give out, but it's also likely a time to recognize students for their years in lessons and graduating seniors. These aren't necessarily awards, so I really like how enlisting the term recognitions is more generalized and all-encompassing. Just some food for thought for you today. Let's get on with the show.
Well, hello, you don't know me, but my name's Andrew Coates, and my main claim to fame nowadays is that I'm married to the wonderful Samantha Coates, who's our guest on this interview. Samantha, welcome.
Oh, thanks for having me, Andrew.
It's funny, when Amy asked you what you wanted to talk about, you said two things. One is that you chose this topic, and we'll get onto that in a moment. And the second one is you felt much more comfortable being interviewed rather than just blurbing on. So here it is. I get to interview, which is quite fun. So thanks for doing that.
It is fun. And hello to all of Amy's loyal podcast listeners. So, yes, the thing came up about what topic do I want to do? Amy asked me. She said I could talk on any topic I liked, and I just thought it's got to be how not to give makeup lessons.
So why did you choose that?
Well, because I think it's the most talked about issue on Facebook that I've seen. In all the piano teacher groups I see, there's so much frustration surrounding what happens when students don't turn up to a lesson and the parents don't want to pay for it, and teachers are backed into a corner. They've either got to credit it or make it up, and either way, the teacher loses out.
Yeah, look, I've watched you agonize about this for over 30 years now. It's been some time. And it's really, I've been fascinated with the way you've evolved your policy on this. And so we're going to talk about a bunch of those things today. You know, what it is that's evolved and how and why you've evolved it. We're going to talk a bit about how even things like COVID have changed the way that you've taught and therefore the way that you can interact with your students and your parents about things like makeup lessons. We're going to talk a little bit about how you go about changing your policy, and particularly we're going to talk a bit about parental buy-in and make that really important step of how do you get the parents to come along on that journey with you. So I'm looking forward to hearing all those things because I've kind of seen him from in the periphery and we've talked about them from time to time, but now we can really drill down.
Yes, and you've been a big part of that, of course, because you're my reasonableness barometer anytime I come up with something new. Yes, so we'll start off with talking about how my policy used to be.
Yeah, let's do that because you've been teaching for a very long time now, since you were, I don't know.
16.
16, wow. Even so before I knew you, almost. Just.
No, I knew you. I had my first student when I was 16. I really pity those first students. I wasn't a very good teacher then. But certainly I had no thought of a policy. I remember that the parent would ring me up maybe 5 minutes before they were supposed to arrive, and they would say, oh, actually, sorry, we're not coming today. And I would just say, oh, okay, and then hang up and then just sadly think that, oh dear, there's money that I can't earn now. Oh dear, you know, that's my pocket money for the week gone, or whatever it was at the age of 16. So that's the very earliest form of studio policy.
There wasn't one.
Correct. Then the next step in the evolution was that students would cancel at the last minute, but I would then have to ask them for payment the next time I saw them, because I would sort of have this vague thing in place that, oh no, you know, I need at least 24 hours notice. But that's really awkward when you have to ask people to pay for two lessons the next time they come, and they often just don't do it.
And how did you even notify them that was part of your policy at that stage?
I think that was all verbal. I didn't have anything in writing, so that didn't really work. That was no good. When I did eventually put something in writing, it was also when I started billing by the term, so in 10-week blocks. This was much better, because then at least I had all the money in advance and I wasn't having to ask them for it. But then I was dealing with people asking for credits or makeup lessons, and this is where it all starts, because if the student hasn't come to the lesson, the parent perceives that they've had no value.
Well, I can imagine the parent thinks, well, if I'm going to have a haircut and then I don't have a haircut, I shouldn't have to pay.
Yes. So,
and they feel the same way about lessons. Why is that different?
Yes. Well, at least with the hairdresser, when a client is not turning up to that spot, they can actually sell that spot to somebody else. Somebody else might walk in and request a haircut at the last minute. And with a busy salon, that's what will happen. But piano teachers don't have walk-ins. There's no one who just suddenly wants a piano lesson. There's no one who you can slot in. There's no such thing as casual piano tuition. So that time slot is reserved for that student, and you can't do anything else with it. You cannot resell it. It is sold to that parent. And then if they don't avail themselves of that time, you are stuck with it. So it's learning how we can deal with this as piano teachers and feel okay about not giving makeup lessons. And that's where I've come to. I feel completely okay about it. But even going back to when I started billing by the term, people still asked for credits or makeup lessons, and I still felt obliged to do it, and I did do it, which meant that it cost me time. We'll come to that, the real cost of makeup lessons. Then I evolved to I didn't give any credits or makeup lessons unless they gave me 24 hours notice. But if they did, I would credit it. If they said, oh, my child's, we're going to Europe and we won't be here for the next 4 weeks, I credited them. I don't know why. And then I started having a very strict policy on one of my days of teaching. Saturday afternoon was prime time. And I said to my families, well, look, if you do want to come on a Saturday afternoon, that's okay. But there are no credits or makeup lessons. Even if you're going away, if you find that you have a weekender that you always want to go to, this is probably not going to work for you. I suggest not to take the Saturday spot, because you have to pay for all the lessons. You're paying for a time slot, essentially.
I do remember. must have been 10 years ago, maybe a bit more. One of your families said to you, we'd like two lessons of credit for the last two lessons of term, because we're going on holidays, because it's cheaper to go on holidays during term time.
Yes.
They were essentially asking you to fund their holiday.
Yes, that is right. And I remember when you first pointed that out to me, they're asking you to subsidize their holiday. And I thought, oh no, that's not right. But now I believe, yes, that is right. If they choose to go on holiday and they're going to miss two lessons, they've got to factor that into their holiday budget. It's not the teacher who should pay by not being able to work then. And then because this strict Saturday policy seemed to work for me, I then just extended it to every day. But I remember when I first decided that I was going to do that, and I said to you, I've decided I'm just going to be really strict every day. No makeup lessons, no credits, that's it. I remember your reaction was, well, that's not entirely reasonable.
There must be some times where it is okay to say I can't come at a short notice, and it's can we make it up? Do you have any policy, any times where that's the case?
Yes, I think that if there is a genuine family emergency, genuinely something that the student could not have ever foreseen, and there is a real problem getting to the lesson, then it's up to me to show compassion. And of course, I will try to make up that time. But what that actually is investing in the future of keeping that student. So if there's constantly non-attendance, and I think it's another thing we should talk about is not call it missed lessons, but call it non-attendance. If the parent clearly isn't particularly committed, if the student's constantly not turning up and that is a liability for you, then you have to fix it by either saying I'm not giving the makeup lessons or getting rid of that student. But if there was a really, really a great student that I did not want to lose who couldn't come 1 week for an unforeseen circumstance, I would definitely choose to make up that lesson. And I would also make a big deal of it and say, look, I wouldn't normally do this, but of course, come at such and such a time. You know, I don't want you to miss out on that lesson. You know, that must have been really hard for you or whatever.
And of course, it's not the only way you invest in your students. You give scholarships, you give them prizes, all kinds of things that as part of that process. So this is just another one of those investments you decided to make.
Yes, that's right. So when you do choose to give a credit or a makeup lesson, it's because of the long-term implications of being able to retain that student. That is what you're investing in. But just constantly giving credits and makeup lessons to people who are going to birthday parties, going on holidays, suddenly have a school event come up, that is just a liability. And that is making you either spend double the time or, if you think of it, you're getting half the pay for those lessons.
Yeah, it's a really good way of looking at it. It's really interesting. And if you don't have a policy, then your parents or your families will take advantage of that. And you need to train them in a lot of ways, right?
That's right. And I think that is why I wanted to talk about this, because I've spent the last 5 years practicing and finessing my policy. And particularly since COVID, I've become quite good at it. So when a parent lets me know, oh, we can't come to, you know, we've got school camp next week. Well, I've got it written down in my policy. But I just say, oh, it's no problem that Ella won't be here. I will source some repertoire for her and I will put some videos in Tonara that she can watch. And instantly the parent gets the idea that, oh, that lesson's going ahead. It's just that Ella won't be there.
Right. Yeah.
Or another great thing to say is when they say, oh, next week, could we possibly change the lesson time because, you know, we've got a family dinner or something. I usually say, well, look, you're welcome to try and swap with another student, but worst case scenario, just send through recordings in advance and I will use Ella's lesson time to review the recordings and send feedback. So that's another way of stating, I'm going to be giving Ella this time that you have paid for. And Ella won't be here, but that's okay. And it won't be as fantastic a use of time as if Ella was here, but lessons that are non-attended, lessons that are not attended, can still have some value when the parent has paid for it. And I think that's the key to not giving makeup lessons. The parent has to perceive that they're not just forfeiting their money for no reason.
Let's talk a bit about some of the things that you've done to provide that value, because you've talked about Tonara and some other things. Let's talk about some of the technology you use to make it possible to do a makeup to do a non-attendance lesson without the student there. Tell me about Tonara for a start.
Well, Tonara is just a learning management system, and there are plenty of them. There's My Music Stuff. There's Cadenza. I think there's lots of different learning management systems, and I adopted Tonara during COVID because then I could have a virtual notebook instead of a physical notebook when I was teaching online. But you don't even need that. I just ask students to send me recordings that they've made on their phone. I mean, really, the devices are a fantastic thing. And 30 years ago, we didn't have this when we were teaching. There was no easy way for students to just send us recordings. I don't ask them to send me videos. They're not massive files. They can send me audio. So I ask them to record all their pieces or even just to record a section of practice and send it to me. And during their lesson, then I listen to those and I'm writing them feedback. And I have to say, though, I ask for probably, if I ask 10 students to send me recordings, if 10 students were going to miss lessons in one particular term, maybe two of them would actually get organized and send me the recordings. Now, that's on them if they don't do it, if they don't take advantage of the value that I've offered. Oh, well. But it's still great to be able to offer it, because then there's this perceived value.
What do you do when someone says, oh, Amy's sick today, or she's got a bit of a sniffle? What's your procedure then?
Yes, well, this is very clearly laid out in my policy. So if there's any illness at all, then we have an online lesson. We just default to that. Now, it's very rare, actually, that a student is so ill they can't even do an online lesson. If rarely, the parent will get back to me and say, look, I'm really sorry, I don't even think they're up to an online lesson. I've put them to bed, they've gone to sleep. And then that's when I say, no problem, I will source some repertoire, I'll put some ideas in, I'll record a little video, I'll put it all in. This is why a system like Tonara is so great. But you could just email something to the parent just as easily. So when the response from me to the parent is, this is what I'm going to do with that time, I think they feel a lot better about it. But I also do say, if anyone else cancels at the last minute, I will let you know. And you can come. Now, I have occasionally done this. I have rung a parent at 7:25 in the morning and said, Flossie's just cancelled her 7:30 lesson. Can you get here? And the parent goes, well, no, like, we've just got out of bed, or we're already on our way to school. But I feel like, well, I've done the right thing. I've offered them a time slot, but they can't drop everything and come at the last minute.
Anyone would think kids are overscheduled.
Well, there you go. But when you think about the flip side of that, essentially that's what parents are asking you to do when they aren't coming. When they call up and say, or even when they give you lots of notice, they're asking you to reorganize your timetable. If they're asking you for a makeup lesson, they're literally asking you to reschedule your life around them. And imagine if every student asked for a makeup lesson in one particular week, you just wouldn't be able to do it. And so if you can't do it for everyone, you shouldn't do it for anyone, and you shouldn't feel, unless there's really, really, extenuating circumstances, unusual circumstances.
One of the things I've heard you say is that this works really well for private teachers, but maybe not so well for peripatetic teachers. So policies are something that you can set for yourself as a private teacher. What's the difference between that and being teaching, say, at a school as part of an organisation?
Yes, I'm really glad you asked me that, because I'm talking from an extremely privileged position of being my own boss and teaching in my own home studio. So I make the rules and everyone else has to just follow them. But if you are teaching in a school, then you're at the mercy of the policy of that school. And it's just not so easy to say that you won't give credits or makeup lessons, because the school might insist on that. Some schools are really good about it and at least have a really organized music department where they will let their teachers know if there is a school camp on, or if there are excursions, or some other reason why a child might not be able to attend a lesson. But it's a really hard situation. And I don't actually teach in a school. I have done it once for a brief period of time. I wouldn't do it again. So this is something, everything I'm saying today is something that is not necessarily going to work for teachers who are working in an environment where it's not their own studio.
So
that's tricky.
What would you suggest for a teacher who has listened to this and really did want to change their policy? What sort of things should they go through?
Yes, that's a good question. It takes time to change a policy. I gave all my students 3 months' notice when I decided that I would no longer give credits or makeup lessons. So I wrote a medium-length email. I tried to make it not too long, and I explained that the nature of piano tuition is such that it is not casual, that when a student doesn't attend in the time slot that they've booked, that time cannot be given to anybody else, and that from now on the term fee applies regardless. And if you find that you cannot attend a lesson for any reason, there are going to be these procedures in place, like sending recordings, or that I will, you know, give value some other way. I asked all the parents to contact me if they had any problem with it. Didn't hear from anybody except for one parent who did call me, and she said, wait, so because we usually go on holidays again during term time, we usually, you know, leave, our school breaks up earlier than others, so are you saying we still have to pay for those lessons? And even at that point, I still felt awkward. It's very confronting when a parent says to you, you know, says that, and it's hard. So I said, I was trying not to say outright and bluntly, yes, you still have to pay. I said, well, the thing is that I am still teaching during that time. The term is still going. So the lessons are still going ahead and I can't really put anybody else in for those weeks you're going to miss. And I finished it by saying, I completely understand if you would prefer to find a teacher who can be more flexible. And they didn't want to find another teacher. I was really banking on I was banking on the fact that they didn't want to, but I was going to give them that option. And that's how I ended the email as well. And when I interview any prospective student, I say it from that point of view. Look, if you take a spot with me, here is policy. Here's what happens in the event of not attending a lesson. I completely understand if you prefer to have a teacher who's more flexible and who can simply accommodate any time changes that you need. And there actually aren't many teachers out there who can do that. And if they are, I don't think they're that happy about it.
It means they've got empty spots.
Well, that's true. But also I see what I see on Facebook are teachers who are incredibly frustrated because they're constantly trying to accommodate all their students' wishes. But there are some teachers who do it and they are happy about it. So I guess my caveat here is, yes, this is all about how not to give makeup lessons. But if you do give makeup lessons and you're really happy to do it, well, that's fine. Don't change anything.
Yeah, so it give makeup lessons if that's your choice, but don't feel like you have to give makeup lessons just because parents ask you to. So let's go on to the asking thing, because went through this at one stage. You would get, you would publish a policy, you had buy-in from your parents, you'd had this one bit of feedback but no other, and you know, you'd solve that, and then someone came to you and said, we'd like to have a makeup lesson, or we'd like to get a credit for a particular time. And you were a bit upset about it.
Yes, I would be outraged. Haven't they read my policy? Don't they know? And I would get really upset that they would ask for a credit for some extended overseas trip when clearly I had said so many times that this was not possible. And then you said to me, well, you know, it's okay to ask. It's okay, you know, they're just asking. And I hadn't really thought about it like that. And then I gave a webinar last year about studio policy. And I talked about a particular scenario which made it a bit more relatable for us as adults. So I said, imagine that you have a hobby and you've taken up knitting. As you do.
As you do.
And imagine that you have a knitting lesson every Tuesday at 1 o'clock. And you enjoy your knitting lessons and you regularly attend. And then all of a sudden a friend blows in from out of town and says, can you meet me on Tuesday for lunch at 1 o'clock? Now, there's two possible scenarios here. In the first scenario, your knitting teacher is extremely flexible, does not mind if you cancel. So now I know I can just cancel my knitting lesson at the last minute and I won't have to pay. So I do. I cancel the knitting lesson and I go and have lunch with my friend. In the second scenario, the knitting teacher has a policy more like my piano teaching policy. No, you cannot cancel at the last minute. I know I'm going to have to pay for that lesson. So now what happens? Well, I could either say to the friend, I'm so sorry, I can't meet you for lunch because I can't cancel my knitting lesson. So that's the first option. Or I could decide to forfeit the knitting lesson and go, well, it's an expensive lunch. I know I have to pay for the lesson, but I really want to see my friend. Or I could just call the knitting teacher and maybe just say, look, I know this is unusual, but my friend has just come in. Like, maybe it will just happen to suit the knitting teacher that I can't come that day. You never know. Can't hurt to ask. And you are the one who made me realize I'm actually the can't hurt to ask sort of person. I think I would be option three. I don't think I would necessarily just forfeit without asking. And that made me it made me get less angry when people ask. So the trick is to gently but firmly reiterate the policy. No, unfortunately, that's not possible. But you can do it very kindly. So when students say, when the parents say, is there any chance that we could get a credit for these 2 weeks we'll be away? I say, wow, that sounds like such an exciting trip. That's amazing. Unfortunately, there's no credits available, but I will make sure that we do blah, 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 blah for Herbie's lessons. And feel free to, we can always have an online lesson while you're in Italy.
Yes, that's true.
The time zones are tricky, but yes.
Why not?
We can, yes, that's right.
From the top of, I don't know, the Leaning Tower of Pisa or something. That'd be great. Do you remember the first time you held firm with a student or a parent?
Oh, yes, I do. I had this student named Lauren, and she couldn't come to her lesson, and I was happy to reschedule the lessons. It was actually before I had instigated my policy of no makeups. So she told me a week in advance that she couldn't come, and I said, well, I do have a spot on a Friday afternoon at 4 p.m. You can come then. And then her dad said, oh no, she's got chess on Friday afternoons. And normally I would go, oh, really? Okay, well, how about, and I would then try to find other times. And this was the first time I went, when he said, oh, she's got chess on Friday afternoons, I said, well, okay, well, I've got that. That's a possibility for you. And I just held firm. And then they went, oh, okay, well, I guess we can miss chess then. And then you realize the parent, it's up to the parent. What are they going to prioritize? And yeah, if they're not going to prioritize piano, that should not be the piano teacher's problem.
Well, that's a great story, because that illustrates every piece of the thing that we've just been talking about. That's, I love it. Excellent. Are there any other things you'd like to talk about in terms of the policy and the evolution of your policy?
Well, I think that not calling them missed lessons is a really important thing in the policy. So there's a big heading in mine that says non-attendance. As soon as you call it a missed lesson, then the parent thinks they've missed something. But actually, they're not going to miss anything. It's their choice. They've prioritized something else. And again, I'm not talking about in cases of sudden family emergency. But if they've chosen to prioritize something, or if there's a clash with another activity, then there's still that lesson is still going to go ahead. So we call it non-attendance. And I think it makes a big difference in the psychology of how the parent thinks about it. So we've got to get them on board.
That's great. And so when you talk about parental thinking, how do parents think of lessons? What are they thinking about when they're thinking about lessons?
Yes. Well, I think in this world of overscheduled children, perhaps the parent knows that the lesson is really the only really good dedicated time that child spends at a piano. And that somehow that lesson counts as practice time as well. And for parents who are really struggling to get their kids to a piano, to then miss the piano lesson, I think the parent knows, well, that's now time they haven't spent, and they really, really want to reschedule that time, because they don't want their child to miss that lesson. But what they do need to understand is that the teacher is not able to accommodate every student's whim of when they need to change.
I like that, yeah. And if they don't attend, what are they actually missing out on? What are the things that they don't get by not attending?
Yes, it's true. I mean, they don't get a great lesson, obviously. You know, they don't get a great lesson, but they're not going to miss out on progress, really, because the progress happens during the practice time. And I know that for my really diligent students, missing a lesson here and there does not impact their progress. And they do send the recordings in advance, and I do send them feedback, and you can progress in that instance. And so when they are really, really busy, there are going to be clashes that come up. And it can even help to say this in advance, like at the beginning when I do take students on. I say there will be the inevitable clash with other activities, and here is what's going to happen when that happens. But if they're really practicing well, it actually doesn't impede their progress. They're not, you know, they're missing out on maybe introducing a new piece, or me playing some duets with them, or interaction that obviously you need parent, you know, the teacher student present for. But really, when they're missing the odd lesson, if they're really doing the practice at home, it's not that much of an issue.
I think that's great. So if you're going to sum up a couple of little things to finish up here about how you go about changing the policy and the things that you've learned over the last little while, how would you finish up?
I would say that first, piano teachers should, or all music teachers should, decide what it is that they're comfortable with. If you are flexible and it works for you, then that's great. But if you're flexible and it's not working for you and you are uncomfortable and you want to change it, then the way to change it is to give the students in your studio, give the parents a lot of notice, 2 to 3 months notice that this is going to happen, and then have the wording that supports it and hold firm, because there will be pushback. And then it's a matter of practicing, always practicing the response. I've gotten very good at implementing my studio policy because I've practiced it. And but at first, it is awkward. It is hard. You will feel pressured. But it is not unreasonable. I think that's the thing I want to say. It is not unreasonable to not give makeup lessons. There are plenty of ways that you can give value to that student when it's their choice to not attend the lesson.
That's great. Samantha Coach, thanks so much for chatting with me. I've really enjoyed it. And I hope that all of you listening out there as well. Back to you, Amy.
Bye. Thanks.
I hope Samantha has encouraged you today and provided a perspective you may have never considered. As we wrap up, I wanted to share a couple of thoughts of my own to follow up. First of all, I think it's important for us to remember that our policies are, first and foremost, about protecting us as business owners. No one else is out there setting our work expectations and schedules. It's important we have strong policies and guidelines in place as a foundation. From there, it's up to us if we want to have a little give and take. It's when we have wishy-washy policies that open the door to too many considerations, such as allowing makeup lessons in certain cases, that we end up having to deal with the emotional labor of deciding whether or not a missed lesson qualifies. Give yourself the backing of a strong policy so it can support you when needed. But if a situation arises where you feel you can give grace, then give it freely. Here's a story from my own experience that fits this perfectly. When I first opened my studio, I had a policy that late payments would incur a $1 late fee per day. I had a mom complain that it was ridiculous and that she would never pay a $1 per day late fee. As a young business owner, the confrontation put a lump in my throat, but thanks to talking it out with my husband, I just told her that my policies are there to protect me in case I get clients who are chronic abusers of tuition deadlines. I was not worried about that being an issue with her, and if she was late once, I wasn't going to be a stickler over a dollar. And that answer was enough for her. I have never forgotten that verbal response. As a side note, I now pretty well do auto payments monthly, so I just keep a general statement that excessive late payments may result in termination of lessons. So I don't actually have a statement that I have a $1 per day late fee. So our policies are there to protect us. Err on the side of strict, such as stating no makeups. Then, if and when you do give grace to a student, when you can, it can be an offering and not an expectation you are required to fulfill. Personally, I have moved to titling this section of my policies as non-attendance. Just as I was talking about in my tip earlier in the episode and using the term recognitions versus awards, there's a mindset shift when you address it as your non-attendance policy rather than your makeup lesson policy. Remember, friends, no one else is making the rules but you for your work-life balance. You're a business owner. A business needs a foundation, and that starts with your policies. If you're still making plans for your summer, consider attending the Piano Teacher Digital Organization Retreat hosted in my home in Indiana. This 3-day getaway is priced at $345 and includes 3 breakfast meals, 3 lunch meals, evening drinks and snacks, accommodation, and all the session content. Visit pianopantry.com/retreat for details. Don't forget the deadline for submitting proposals for the 2025 MTNA National Conference in Minneapolis is this Thursday, April 18th. If you're curious about advice on submitting proposals, jump into the Music Studio Startup podcast, where I was just talking about this topic with Andrea Miller. Thanks for being here, everyone. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button so all the new episodes will download automatically. Also, if you haven't yet, take a moment to leave a rating and review so this podcast is visible to more in our community.